Welcome to a Prevention Connection interview, where we share conversations with innovators in the world of prevention of violence against women.
Hello, this is Chance Sniffen, and I'm interviewing Joshua O'Donnell, who is the Men's Violence Prevention Coordinator at Western Washington University. Hello, Joshua, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Great. You had submitted a proposal to present at the National Sexual Assault Conference, and so I'd love it if you could talk about both your proposal and about your program at Western Washington. So could you tell us a little bit about your program?
Well, the program was started in 1999 by Dr. Patricia Fabiano out of our Prevention and Wellness Services Department here at Western Washington University, and was run by Brian Paul, who has run the program for about 7 years. I stepped in originally as a student and a volunteer for him, and then when he went off to teach, he passed it on to me. And so right now we're coming into, our 10th year in existence here. Used to be grant-funded, now we're funded by the university, which is very rare, and we are so happy to be a full-on part of the university. And basically, the program was designed off of Lolo Hong's book that she had written, Babes, Booze, and Brawls, and it basically looked at how to begin forming Western Men Against Violence groups and college campuses and bringing men into a movement of peer health education, you know, talking with other men about consent and sexual assault and healthy relationships. And so after our program started, Patricia Fabiano handed Brian the book and said, read this, do it. She is a smart woman. To this day, I'm still using Lolo's ideas. And so what we have set up here at our university is the Men's Violence Prevention Project. It has one staff coordinator, who is myself, and I work 40 hours a week with 7 volunteers that are trained peer health educators and self-identified men on campus that do exactly what I was talking about Lolo proposed, you know, going out, creating spaces for men to begin talking about violence in our communities, and most importantly, talking about how masculinity is so connected with it. One thing I've found in doing this work for so many years is that for men to really get involved and to talk with other men and engage community members about why ending violence is so important is because for them, they have to get that personal buy-in, you know, see what really, not what's in it for them. I don't want to make it sound like it's a greedy thing, but recognize and acknowledge that it definitely is something that affects them. You know, that beginning work about ending violence against women is so important, not only for the women and trans-identified folk in the community, but also for their own identity. And that's what we really try and create here. So logistically, the Men's Project is out of our Prevention and Wellness Services Department. And then another big part of what I do is open up a space called Western Men Against Violence, which is a student-run organization that I oversee and help run with my peer health educators. And that's just a space where men meet once a week and come and talk about issues. One day we may have some folks from the Women's Center come in and do a training on domestic violence awareness and how to build a healthy relationship for any folks who identify as men on campus. And then another week, we might even just talk about violence in sports and how that impacts our ideas of masculinity and control and what it really means to be a man. And so it's a great structure we have here because we have one space where anyone can come to that is Western Men Against Violence and just talk about whatever's on their mind. And then if they want to go to the next level of volunteering and spreading more awareness and education, they can then become a trained volunteer for me and work within the Men's Project and go out into classrooms and residence halls and do our sexual assault and healthy relationships programs.
So it sounds like you've been doing this work for a while now, and I know the program has been in existence a while now. When I first started working in this movement, it's probably around 8 or 9 years ago, Brian was one of my first introductions to kind of men, and he did a training, actually, when I worked at the University of Arizona, when we were just starting a Men's Project. It was a great training, and I learned a lot of my own core lessons from the work that he did, and I know he learned from Lulu Hong. And so in terms of not only for you as an educator yourself, but also in terms of the whole program, what do you think have been kind of the major lessons learned about working with men and working with men on college campuses around these topics, like the core things that you think about in terms of your own program development?
That's a perfect question that we definitely try and bring to the presentation because we feel like just that basic idea doesn't get brought up enough. And I think what we found is a few things. So first, the main thing that comes to mind is definitely that men want this space. They want a program that addresses men's commitment to a community, men's activism, a space where men can come together without competition or a feeling of one-upping one another, but a true space of support they can express their own ideas. And so behind that, I think one thing that's critical in starting a men's program, which is a lesson I definitely learned, is that for that buy-in or commitment I was talking about men getting involved and retaining their volunteering for years to come throughout college, is we found two really powerful things happen. One is that they stay committed because they are exposed to the real stories of men and women and trans folk on that campus and their experiences with sexual assault or violence in their families and lives. And it's those personal stories that we really see retain their membership. And then the second thing was just what I was talking about, creating a space where every week you have a facilitator come in and run a Western Men Against Violence meeting or whatever group you have, where men can just come and experience what I had when I was a freshman, where I can talk about my ideas of what a healthy relationship looks like. And even if it might not be the right ideas, you know, being young and trying to learn about communication and so on and so forth, the men that I was around didn't make fun of me about that. They didn't criticize me. They didn't peck away at my masculinity like I had experienced so much when I was playing football in high school, right? Like that. The men that I had come into contact with were built around creating a community of respect, were built around supporting each other while challenging the ideas that were there. And I think if men are just provided a space where they can see, you know, if it's called Men Against Violence or whatever, that there's no stereotype behind that. It's just honest men coming forward and talking about issues that they know all men are dealing with. The main point, I think, from it is recognizing that men do want this. No matter what group you go into, a sports team, fraternity, men in a women's studies department, right? Like, no matter what stereotype you have of them, acknowledge that they're all going to want to learn how to treat people with respect and have a space where they can be honest and not criticized. So that was a big lesson that I learned.
Well, in a reality that a lot of educators experience of defensiveness around, especially addressing issues of sexual violence or relationship violence with men, would you say that creating that environment of respect helps to counter that defensiveness?
Most definitely. And I think that also just comes down to men as presenters or my peer health educators. The number one thing I tell them is be honest with your experience. You know, if you feel like there's a riff in the presentation, then drop the formality of it. And right off the bat, just ask, like, why is this tough to talk about? If my volunteers feel comfortable, I ask them to divulge their personal experiences when they got involved with the group. One thing that I like to talk about when I present is, even though I've been doing this for 7 years and consider myself very open, now when I started as a freshman and my sister had told me to go to this Western Men Against Violence meeting, I had told her, oh, okay, I'll go to it, but like, they're not going to try and hug me, are they? You know, like, I was very up against wanting to go to this group. You know, like, she had to force me to go to it. And so I think that even by me telling that story just breaks down the defensiveness, right? Like, being authentic and honest with your own experiences and being a man talking about this thing just kind of goes against the fact that it's like, I'm not here to man hate. I'm not here to say, like, I'm a good guy and you're all potential rapists. This is education that I never got, and so I would like to share it with you.
That sounds great. That sounds like a great way to address not only men and also boys. That actually works really well with boys. And
yeah.
I think that in general, that is kind of the various ways and the various programs there are now to engage men around topics of sexual violence. I think that kind of approach is becoming more widespread.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
Because I think people see how effective it is. And in terms of kind of seeing the results of your programming, what ways have you seen this kind of programming impact your campus, if any? Mm-hmm. Have you seen it spread out into other groups? Are other groups talking about the kind of work that you're doing? Or have you seen, like, just kind of any kinds of norms change or any other kinds of change in your community?
Yeah, well, a real tangible change I've seen happen is when I was a freshman volunteering with the group, there were 3 men coming to our Western Men Against Violence meetings. And when we would have a big sign-holding event or march going through our community here, on a good day, there would be a dozen men holding signs or a dozen men on the march. But just this last year, we had consistently 15 men coming to Western Men Against Violence meetings. And we participate in the Walk a Mile in Her Shoes march that happens. That was started by Frank Baird. And so, yeah, that's something that we love to bring to our campus, because last year we were able to have 150 men raise over $3,000 for our Rape Crisis Center and just be a presence in the community. And while, you know, on that march, you aren't learning the struggles of domestic violence in the community and a lot of realistic facts, or having those really intense, engaging conversations one-on-one with men, it's that kickoff point for them to learn that it's something they can be a part of and be comfortable with. And hopefully we see them come back, and it has helped our numbers. So that's one way, is the tangible change. And then the other thing I've seen happen is just the way people talk about consent. we used to do this program called Gender Mending, where we would ask the men to, you know, talk about the masculine identity and what does it really mean to be a man. And it used to be, you know, 7 years ago, it was point blank. They would say, you know, toughness, strength, all these things right away. But right now, we still get those things coming up, but we always get a guy saying, I don't think that's what it means to be a man. I think we need to begin reinventing it. And so when that was ultimately the point of the program I would try and make, now it's just coming up in the midst of the program. So I see a lot of evolution of the masculine identity happening with men on our campus here. I see a lot of awareness of our group. Whenever I go and do a presentation in a classroom and ask who's heard of Western Men Against Violence or who saw 150 guys wearing high heels last year walking through downtown, a majority of the students are raising their hands. Yeah, I think it's just something that has grown. Maybe not the mission statement has grown in popularity, but the acknowledgement, recognition, and appreciation of the group is definitely growing.
Evolution is a great way to frame that, too, I think.
Yeah.
You know, this kind of the evolution of ideas about masculinity, about being men, and about what it means. And I also like that that it sounds like you also incorporate the idea of masculinity as kind of a spectrum, because I just in the way you're using the language, that you're kind of using a continuum of ideas about masculinity. Would you say that that's been important in your programming, too?
Yeah, most definitely has. You know, there are men that when we start our Men Against Violence meetings this fall quarter, you know, they're going to be freshmen that have come in and were forced to come there by their sisters just like me, and then men that seek that out, that are very educated about gender. And so the first thing we talk about is that there's a spectrum of understanding about gender. We all need to help support each other through it. Yeah, I think it's definitely something that is changing all the time. You know, we used to be very straightforward and we're a men's group and we're focused on violence against women. But what we've seen come up of late is with the group growing is that we have to realize, what about trans folks in our community? What about these other ideas around masculinity? Are we trying to dismantle the box and get rid of the stereotype completely, or broaden the box to keep a lot of men that hold on traditional values within the group, and then also make a space comfortable for people that are non-traditional? As I'm talking about it, it feels a little hard to explain, but there's just such a wide spectrum of men getting involved that it's tough to create balance of tapping into those white knight men that come into our groups. You know, the guys that feel like I need to be the protector of the women in my life, and so I'm going to be a part of this group because I need to save helpless women, right? How do we grasp a hold of them while at the same time getting in touch and connecting with men that are like, that's a completely ridiculous idea. I've never felt like my masculinity has been recognized and I don't want it to be, but there's men in the title, there's against in the title, am I part of the, you know, so it's been interesting. But I think as I'm talking about it too, one thing that comes up if anyone's interested in starting is just taking the time to try and have one-on-one conversations with each of those men and really explain the mission and why you do what you do. Can help bring a lot of clarity to a group too and improve numbers.
Right, and how do you tap in? Also, I think one of the challenges with the white knight paradigm, how do you tap into the good intentions behind that? Explaining why that's a problematic way to look at it in terms of, well, are you there to save others, you know, for your masculine purpose? Are you there just as much to save yourself and help yourself in terms of the way that masculinity in our culture harms men, but also to a far more intense degree harms women. Not the way that masculinity in our culture does, but the way that we perform masculinity and the way that masculinity is often constructed for us in the negative ways that it is, which I think a lot of men find aren't all negative. And even, there are a lot of positive aspects of masculinity that I think that we want to keep. But
yeah, and that masculinity, you know, that white knight, I think what's interesting about that too is it's not just reinforced by the men around them. You know, it's not all fathers and friends saying, you need to be chivalrous, you need to take care of your woman, you need to do this and this. It's also a stereotype reinforced by a lot of women around them too. And so then when they come and talk with me about that, that's even something to bring up and begin addressing with them and working around that. Yeah, there are women that have certain expectations of you to do these things, but how do you feel about that expectations on your own? You know, like, what is that doing to your identity or your original aspirations of what it meant to be a human rather than, you know, being a man in this light? And so, yeah, that it's such an interesting cultural group to get in touch with, if you want to call it that. I don't know.
In addition to the things you've already talked about, what are some of the things that you think it's important for men's engagement programs to remember or to be part of the approach of how men's engagement programs present themselves to men and to the communities that they're a part of that they're trying to engage with?
Right. Well, like we were talking about with the White Knight thing and the good intentions behind it, I think it's so important to acknowledge that men being involved in prevention work and work around ending sexual assault and violence in communities really came out of the women's movement, really came out of the encouragement and support and education of women bestowing that upon men. You know, like I was talking about before, our grant was written by the head of our department, Dr. Patricia Fabiano. She handed Brian Paul, who has definitely done amazing work for our community and brought out an extreme amount of knowledge. That knowledge began for him when he was working in a rape crisis center that he was in a staff surrounded by women. The book he was given was written by a woman. Like, I came into this job in this position because of my sister. I think that's really an important thing to acknowledge, that when you're creating a space that has men in the title, a space for members of the community who identify as men, we really need to respect that that's a privileged gender group. And so the work that we do, even though we're trying to work to support women in the community or whatever the goal is of your men's group, that you need to work with the women or that group that you're working with. You know, you need to stay connected with your LGBTA, stay connected with the women's center that is on your campus, and make sure that, not to get in touch and say, oh, we're going to do this event, is that okay? And use that as a buffer just to make sure, oh, we can't do this or we can do that, you know, and just go mindlessly through it. But to stay connected and explain to other organizations on your campus the goals of what you're doing, why you feel it's a necessity, and then be open to the advice and support of them and build that mutual relationship. I think one other thing that goes along that is when you are beginning to start a men's project, look at the existing organizations with men who are leaders. You know, we didn't tap into the amazing resources that is our Ethnic Student Center here on campus, where there's a ton of student volunteers, that is the resource and outreach programs here. And so that's a relationship we've been trying to build over the year, but it's been tough because it wasn't there from the beginning. Yeah, I think that's just really important to stay connected with all the other movements and make sure that you're not shining above or getting a lot of the recognition that is being taken away from other groups you're trying to be allies to. I think I see that happen a lot. You know, my sister and I go out and give a presentation, and everybody will go to her with their problems and go to me with praise. And we're talking about the exact same thing, and I think that really comes down to the gender. So just being aware of that is really important.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Mm-hmm. I look forward to seeing a presentation on this in the future.
Of course. Yeah, I really appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to this Prevention Connection interview. Prevention Connection is a project of the California Coalition Against Sexual Assault, with funding from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The views presented on Prevention Connection are not necessarily the views of the United States government, the CDC, or CalCASA. You can contact us by email at info@preventconnect.org, or you can learn much more on our website at www.preventconnect.org.